Show on Beat, where we talk to a couple of different beat reporters each week. We're going to get a reporter from each team this season and have them on the show so we can help you guys get some more in-depth coverage. On today's show, we have reporters covering the Patriots, the Buccaneers, and the Lions. Up first, we have Evan Lazar from CLNS Media. Hey, Evan. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's fantastic. So I guess it's great that we get to start with the most spoiled team out there. So you guys just used a great word, embarrassment of riches. How does it feel to be a Patriots reporter right now?
You know what? It's I think the best part about being a Patriots reporter, besides covering a team that wins a lot, is just kind of being in this little snapshot of NFL history and being able to witness Belichick and Brady and all these guys that are just so good at what they do. And it's kind of contagious, you know, it trickles down to all of us in some way, shape or form. So I think the coolest part about it is just, you know, 20, 30 years from now, obviously I'm living in the moment right now, but I'm going to be able to tell my kids and then my grandkids that I covered Tom Brady, that I spoke to him, that I spoke to Bill Belichick, and that they knew who I was and how great they were too, just, you know, as players. So I think that that's probably the coolest part, something that I'm going to be able to, you know, tell people forever.
That's a great view on it. And I got to say, it's really awesome to hear somebody really appreciate how much history is really going on right now out there. Which brings us to our first question. How long have you been covering the Patriots?
So this is my second season covering them full time on location, on the beat, if you will. I've been covering them for about 4 years now, but the first 2 years that I did it were from afar. And now I'm obviously in the locker room every day and at practice and at the games and all that stuff. So it's a dream come true for me. I'm a Boston kid. So to be able to cover the hometown team is, you know, basically what I've been dreaming of doing for a decade.
That's awesome. Did you go to school for journalism?
Yeah, so I went to Ithaca College, go Bombers, and I studied journalism there. And that was kind of my goal all along. I would probably say since I was 13 or 14, when I started watching Around the Horn with all those guys, I said, what do those guys do for a job? You know, how did they land here? How did they get here? You know, Tony Kornheiser and Will Bond on PTI also. And someone said they do this thing called beat writing, and they covered teams and then they worked their way up. And I was like, well, that's what I want to do. So that's what I went to college for. And that's what I've been doing since.
That's fantastic. Not many people get to live the dream of covering their home team. So that's super exciting, man. I can't imagine how exciting it must be to go to work. And especially, I mean, you guys aren't the Dolphins. You aren't the Browns up to last year. I mean, there's hope abundant running around. And I guess you got to cover them for their for the Super Bowl last year. Was that a fun season? Did you get to travel at all into the playoffs with them?
Yeah, so actually I would say, you know, the Super Bowl was obviously awesome and it's a spectacle within itself, but I actually was at the AFC Championship game in Kansas City, and that atmosphere and just the game itself, obviously for us Patriots fans and writers, it worked out well for us in the end. But more so than that, the atmosphere of being in Kansas City for that game, one of the loudest stadiums I've ever been in. And the Patriots and Tom Brady made it the whole place go silent for a lot of it, you know, the first half and then obviously at the end. But when the Chiefs were mounting their comeback, just the atmosphere in there was like nothing I've ever experienced before at a sporting event or anything like that. So it was unbelievable to be there in that game. And then obviously the Super Bowl is the Super Bowl. It's just an incredible event and it's like nothing else. And being in the locker room after the Patriots won, just the celebration that was on, a lot of the stuff that they're throwing back in the media's face, because if you remember last year, there was a little bit more hate and a little bit more doubters towards the Patriots than there were this year, that's for sure. So to see that team go from 2-2 or 1-2 actually in September, after losing back-to-back games to the Jaguars and the Lions, to winning the Super Bowl for a sixth time was quite the turnaround.
Well, and I remember one of the biggest stories being where Tom Brady wasn't during OTAs last year where he was, and you know, he got to put a very excellent exclamation point on that season. Like, does it matter where I am?
Nope, it does not matter where he is. And he missed OTAs again this year, or skipped them, and he came back in training camp and he looks like he might be in better shape and playing better than he was last year, at least for the time being. You know, obviously we'll see what happens. Last year, you know, when he did start to, I wouldn't call it, it was a slump. You know, he was in a slump, and every good player gets kind of in those slumps every once in a while. And when he was in that slump, it happened much later in the year. You know, it was after that body took a bunch of blows early on in the season, and it was, you know, week 14, week 13, that kind of range. And eventually he kind of came out of it in the playoffs after a bye week, and then ramped up the stakes a little bit, and he ramped up his play. But this year, through two games, he's just been outstanding. You know, if it wasn't for Lamar and Dak and Mahomes putting up insane numbers, then he probably would be the front runner for MVP in a normal year.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a old guy trophy to win, but he certainly is the MVP of 40-plus this year. I think he's the only guy still healthy enough and doing well. Vinatieri is falling apart at the seams right now. So who's the most exciting player that you cover? Who's the person that makes you giddy to go to work in the morning?
It's a good question. You know, I think that Brady's, I want to put him in a separate category because obviously he's Brady. So that's kind of an easy one. But if I had to pick one that isn't Brady, and I also want to leave Julian Edelman out of it too, because those two guys I think are just in kind of a rare class. But watching Stephon Gilmore play every single day, and watching him play specifically in training camp when we got to watch the full practices, that's a guy that's a master at his craft right now. And he just plays at such a high level. He's in such control of his body and of his surroundings and of what his assignment is and who he's covering. And he never seems to panic, and he never seems to be out of position. And every single throw that's thrown his direction is contested, and, you know, highly contested and difficult to complete. So I think that watching him work is probably one of the more fascinating things, because he has just completely dominated everybody that's lined up across from him going back to the end of July when training camp started.
Yeah, he is definitely a brutal lockdown corner. And as a Ravens fan, man, I am so envious some days. I mean, we certainly have the roster to compare this year, but man, Belichick knows how to stack that talent and really develop it. Like you said, to watch Stephon Gilmore really turn into the player that he has become. He certainly started off well, but damn, he's good.
Yeah.
What have you been surprised by the most so far?
Well, I think that there's kind of a notion or this stereotype about the Patriots that the players aren't allowed to talk and that they're all robotic and they don't give answers to the media. And I actually don't think that that's true. There are certain things that they won't touch. You know, if you ask them about a specific play call, if you ask them about a game plan wrinkle, if you ask them about, you know, was this your job or that guy's job on a specific play, they're not going to answer that type of question. But if you ask them about technique, if you ask them about their mindset and their strategy and their overall, you know, kind of approach to their job, they can give some really in-depth answers. And Belichick's the same way. You ask Belichick, like today, he went on for 25 minutes about various things about the team, from the Jets to special teams to other players, Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown, whatever the case may be. It's just, you have to learn, and this is something that I still learn every single day, how to ask the questions and how to kind of point them in the right direction. And then when you ask the questions properly, they actually do give some really good answers.
You know, they say the same about polygraph questions. It's all about how you ask them.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly the same way. Because if you ask them, you know, a question about, oh, you know, this play, somebody, you know, blew this assignment, like this coverage didn't go the way it was supposed to, they're not going to throw anybody under the bus, right? They're not going to say it was this guy, it was that guy. But if you ask them, you know, what is your technique or what is your mindset or what is this guy like that you went up against on the opponent, they'll answer the question.
And that's great to hear. I mean, you definitely do hear a lot of, a lot of bad talk about Patriots in the media. Do you think that they get extra coaching on media appearances than maybe some other teams who let people go out there and make a fool of themselves, their franchises, their owners, their teammates? I mean, some of this stuff is outrageous that you I don't know. I served in the military, and there's certainly a lot of control of information. So I don't see what Belichick and the Patriots do is all that odd. I mean, that is, it's very important to control information that comes out of a locker room.
Yeah, and I don't want to compare it, obviously, to the the armed services or anything like that. But I do think that his father was a Navy guy, and I think that he does kind of take a little bit of a page out of the military's book when it comes to that and controlling the information and being able to kind of set the narrative, right? That's a big thing for Belichick. He doesn't want us, the media, to be writing the narratives. He wants the team itself to write the narratives. And really, I think the biggest thing is that they have certain talking points that he likes them to stick to. They obviously always praise the other team, whether it's the Dolphins, the Jets, or the Chiefs, or the Ravens, or, you know, whatever it is. They're always going to come out and say that, oh, this is a really tough team. It's going to be a tough week. We're going to have to work our butts off and prepare well. And even if they're playing a team like the Dolphins last week, who they knew they were going to beat 50-0, you know, it doesn't really make a difference. And I think the other thing is that they steer clear from certain talking points like game plan, like I said, and certain assignments on certain plays. All that kind of stuff is off limits. So you ask them questions about that and they gloss right over it. The third thing I will say is, like, when they bring in a guy like Antonio Brown or Josh Gordon last year, they get heavily, heavily coached on how to answer questions about those guys. And it's only what the kind of the script says. It's like a telemarketer, right? Like you call, telemarketer calls you and they got a script in front of them and they say, all right, you know, this is my opening spiel. Then you ask a question and they got a prompt of what to say to the question that you asked and so on. It's a lot like that.
I have to agree with the way they do it. I know not everybody will, you know, there's a lot of freedom of information people, but I understand control of information, especially in sensitive situations. And when your game plan, I mean, we all know that the Patriots had a few brushes with dishonesty. We'll say it that way and we'll leave it in the past. But you know that they're clever. You know that these guys are thinking of every way to gain an advantage in a sport that has very few of them. So. Right. They're definitely thinking up top. Now, that being said, do you think the question really reads, what is the most pressing offensive need for your team? But I guess I got to ask you, do you think there is a pressing offensive need right now for the Patriots?
Well, they've got some injuries up front on the offensive line. And I really like I'm trying to find a good comparison, but it's kind of like having a Ferrari and you're missing like the front wheel or something like that. You know, you're not missing the whole car, but you're missing a little bit of the foundation of that car. And they got all these receivers, they got Tom Brady, they got a bunch of backs in the backfield, but they have a journeyman left tackle in Marshall Newhouse right now, because Isaiah Wynn, their stud second year tackle, was a first round pick last year, is out with a toe injury for the next at least 8 weeks. See, they just put him on injured reserve yesterday. So if you're looking for kind of a crack in the foundation, it's up front with the big guys. And I know that's not, you know, we love to talk about receivers and quarterbacks in this league, and it's not necessarily the sexiest thing to talk about offensive line. But the Patriots right now, they're expecting to get Marcus Cannon, their starting right tackle, back. But they technically could have backups at three of the five spots, because their center spot, David Andrews, is also out for the season. So they already have a backup at center. They're expecting to have a backup at left tackle, and Marcus Cannon is nursing a shoulder injury, so they could have a backup at right tackle also. The good news is for Patriots fans that Dante Scarnecchia is one of the best offensive line coaches in the history of the sport. So, you know, they have a guy that is Belichick-like, you know, in his position at least. And that's good news in terms of kind of coaching those guys up and getting those guys prepared. But it's definitely one of those things where they have this great foundation and they have this great engine, but they don't have a foundation to it right now.
That's a great analogy. They're certainly and the wheels could really fall off due to this one missing tire.
We've seen it all the time across the league. You know, there's so many teams that have all these weapons and have great quarterbacks, and when you can't protect those guys and get the time that they need to get the ball to the guys down the field, it really doesn't matter. It's all null and void.
No, you're absolutely right. And having Antonio Brown's not going to do you a lick of good if Tom Brady can't stand up long enough to throw it to him. And the one place where I would be concerned about Tom Brady's age, because obviously his arm strength's holding up so far, would be if he gets hit a lot, if that offensive line turns into more Swiss cheese or a leaky sieve, that could be dangerous for an older quarterback to be taking that many hits.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's really, because defensively, they're unbelievable. They've been the best defense in the league through 2 weeks. And, you know, granted, their opponent, especially Miami, was not very good, but they're defensively, we expected them to be very good this year, kind of building off of that Super Bowl performance. And they've kind of picked up right where they left off and are starting to build even more so on that Super Bowl performance. So defensively, they've been really good. Belichick is a ex-special teams coach, so the kicking game has always been a priority for him, similar to your guy John Harbaugh in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. You know, very big on kicking game and special teams and all those different phases of the game. So really the only weakness, if you can point to one, with this Patriots team is potentially up front with the offensive line.
All right, so on to the last question now, Evan. Where can we find your work?
Yeah, absolutely. So follow me on Twitter at EZLazar, LAZAR. That is where you can find pretty much everything that I do, writing. We do videos on clnsmedia.com's YouTube page. We have a full, videos three a day during the week and a couple on game day as well from the field afterwards. And we also have follow Patriots CLNS on Twitter. If you want to find what I write, my podcast, Pats All 22, is on iTunes and Spotify and every place that you would get a podcast normally. And the YouTube page, those three places, we really flood those things this time of year, especially during the season.
Well, it's been awesome to have you on, Evan Lazar. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. It's been great to get a little window into the Patriots world and to yours. Thanks for sharing a little bit of your journey with us, and hopefully we'll hear from you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And next up, we have Greg Allman, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So how are you doing, Greg?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for having me on.
So I have to admit, the first time somebody said your name, I thought they said Greg Allman, and I thought we were pulling out a Ouija board and talking to one of the great Southern blues rockers of our generation. I can't say I'm disappointed that it's you. I just thought it was somebody else.
I thought that him passing away might change that or lessen that. It really hasn't. So no, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm a rambling man, but not the one you wanted.
Well, you know, I'll take one when I can get one. So, hey, how long have you been covering the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
I've been covering the Bucs. This is my seventh season and my second with The Athletic. So, yeah, I've been here since 2013 was the first year.
And what is changed with Bruce Arians coming to town? What do you feel like he has brought to this team that makes them a more formidable foe?
Yeah, he's my fourth head coach in seven seasons, and probably the most distinguished of the four. I mean, Lovie Smith had been to a Super Bowl, but, I mean, you got a two-time NFL Coach of the Year, to bring him out of retirement here. It's been a while. I mean, the Bucs haven't been in the playoffs since 2007, so, it's easy for hopes to get up in August and September as things get going, but I think there's optimism here that he can do things that the last few coaches here haven't been able to do to get things back on track here.
Do you think he is the answer for Jameis Winston?
That's probably the biggest question to be answered this season. I think he has a great history of cultivating young quarterbacks. Was with Peyton Manning his rookie year early on in Indy, was there with Ben Roethlisberger as an assistant with the Steelers when he got started, and then was, Andrew Luck's coach his rookie year. So the reputation is that of being a quarterback whisperer. And the Bucs would certainly love that if Jameis Winston can kind of be the next name on that list.
Yeah, I'd certainly love it. I've got him a lot of places in fantasy leagues, and the first couple weeks have been a little disappointing. How do you feel about your team's performance so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, they're 1-1, which is kind of where I think most people expected them to be. From a fantasy standpoint, yeah. I mean, Winston's had a quiet start, two touchdown passes to Chris Godwin, but hasn't really clicked with Mike Evans, with O.J. Howard. You know, I mean, last year the Bucs led the NFL in passing yards, so I think the expectation was certainly that they'd be a more high-powered offense. They've been a little bit more balanced in terms of using the run game more. Winston threw the ball only 25 times Thursday at Carolina. That's pretty low for him, just because so much of their prolific numbers last year were them coming from behind, them trying to rally after digging a big hole early in the game. So if they're a better team, it might actually hurt their fantasy numbers just because they're not having to throw the ball 40 times trying to get back from a two-touchdown deficit.
Well, and a lot of what you do is not necessarily correlated to what we do, which is try and pull, you know, fantasy stats out. But when you're covering real football, you don't care if Jameis Winston threw 10 times like Kirk Cousins did in week one. If they win, they win, and that's good for you guys.
Right. And I mean, I think we recognize any sports writer nowadays knows that some of the interest in the NFL, a decent chunk of the interest in the NFL, is fantasy related and gambling related. So the Bucs have traditionally been a team that's probably better to fantasy fans than they are to football fans. I mean, they're 5-11 in the last 2 years. But if you had Mike Evans, you weren't really that disappointed with him last year. There's always excitement about guys like Chris Godwin and Ronald Jones, just because of the sleeper aspect of being, an unknown on an up-and-coming team. So, no, fantasy is a big part of what people are interested in when they're watching an NFL game these days.
Absolutely. And Chris Godwin is a local favorite around here. I'm in Delaware right now, and he went to high school up in, I believe, Wilmington.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he's, you know, someone fantasy people have been excited about for the last 2 years. You go back a year ago, the way he finished his rookie year kind of had him emerging. And then last year, you know, to outperform DeSean Jackson and kind of set himself up as a strong number two, had a lot of hype coming into the season. And really so far, I mean, he's outpointed Mike Evans. He's their leader in receptions, in yards. He has their only passing touchdown. So two touchdowns in two games. It's a great start. He had a career high for yards on Thursday. I think he'll continue to be right there with Mike Evans as the best play on the team. And a consistent producer.
Yeah, he has absolutely looked like he's living up to every inch of the hype. And this is this his third season? And is that correct?
Yeah, third year, right. And third year, was a third-round pick out of Penn State. Really did almost nothing the first half of his rookie year, like 8 catches, and then really caught fire from there. Did really well down the stretch his rookie year. And then last year, you know, came up really big. They had so many targets last year in terms of DeSean Jackson and Adam Humphries and O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate, where they went about 6 wide distributing the passing game, but really got his share and set himself up to be, you know, for a lot of people, like a top 20 receiver going into drafts.
Yeah, he definitely has really, really outperformed what a lot of people who wanted to be a little higher on Mike Evans, who took Mike Evans in the third round of their draft, did not want Chris Godwin to look like he's quickly usurping this number one role. I guess it's going to be more of a 1A, 1B instead of the traditional wide receiver one, wide receiver two roles. And with a perfect segue there, who has been the most exciting player for you to cover during your career and this year?
Exciting is a hard thing to really describe. I mean, the Bucs have had good players. You know, Mike Evans has probably been, in the last 5 years, you'd say the most exciting one here, just because, you know, 5 straight 1,000-yard seasons, been to 2 Pro Bowls. In the absence of a playoff team, that's probably what you look to, is individual success on a team like this. Lavonte David is a guy that's been to the Pro Bowls and done well. I mean, there's lots of individual players on this team. But when they're going, you know, the teams I've covered one winning season in these 6 years. They were definitely in the playoff chase in 16, finished 9-7, just missed it on a tiebreaker. But yeah, they've had definitely individual seasons that are exciting to cover, and Mike's had a bunch of those for sure.
Yes, he has. Who has surprised you the most so far?
Only 2 weeks. So, I mean, it's like we thought Ronald Jones could do more and be more and challenge Peyton Barber for a big chunk of the load carrying the ball. I can't say that's a surprise. You know, Godwin, there was so much excitement for Godwin that just for him to match, like you said, just to kind of keep up with the hype is hard to do. He was a guy nationally people were pointing to as a guy that should exceed expectations. So just for him to have touchdowns in each of the first two games when the offense hasn't really clicked, that's probably the most impressive thing. As much hype as there was on him, he's lived up to it so far.
Yes, he has. And good, I mean, I can't say enough good things about him. Like I said, he's a local boy. So, like, we love to watch somebody from Delaware succeed because there aren't a whole lot of them in sports right now. Who do you think?
Great kid, honestly. Very likable, easy. If you get to know him off the field, just super likable guy, very mature. He's just going to grow into this and be a great player for them.
That's awesome. And with their quarterback being Jameis Winston, there is a lot of bad example to follow there. And I don't want to talk bad about a player necessarily, but there are some really, really poor life decisions made. And I really don't understand where that came from. Do you think he's starting to mature more than he knows is the contract year? Do you see more focus out of Jameis Winston, I guess, is a better way to ask that question this year, knowing that could be his last?
Yeah, at least last year in Tampa.
Yes.
It's tricky. I mean, it's one of those where I think he stepped up a lot. You know, a year ago, he was serving a 3-game suspension for something that happened in 2016. I think he's had a lot of things outside football that have grounded him a little bit. He's a father now. He's getting married next year. So family is a good perspective for somebody who's still only 25 years old. You know, he's very active in the community here, had a fundraiser Saturday night here in Tampa where he raised $325,000 to go towards technology for classrooms in Tampa. So he does a lot of things, especially since he's been here in Tampa, that are the right things and the things you'd want a franchise quarterback to do in his community for sure.
That's definitely good to hear because there was a lot of concern when he came out, and over the past few years with other things coming out, it's good to know that that Jameis is really understands that there's more to life than football and that he's stepping up in the community and using his platform to affect positive change on people and his community, because there's certainly a lot of people out there that could use the help. I love to see athletes reach out to help communities that they're involved in and that they work around, and especially people who made a mistake, because I know I certainly don't have a picture perfect record, and I wouldn't want anybody scrutinizing that kind of thing. So it's fantastic to see that he's moving along a little bit. What do you think the most pressing offensive need for the Bucs would be right now?
You know, their offensive line is still a little bit unsure on the right side. They've got a first-year starter at guard in Alex Kappa. Their right tackle is 33 years old in the last year of contracts. They're probably going to be moving on from Damar Dotson there. Their running game, you know, as exciting as they've been the first 2 weeks, their running game was bottom five in the league in yards and yards per carry last year. So that can still be much improved. But, you know, with Arians, I think they're going to have a more balanced offense. And if the right side of the line can be as good as the left side, this will be a really good offense all around.
Do you think that the Bucs will make a move for either Melvin Gordon or maybe Kenyon Drake? Do you think that they're going to try and beef up this backfield, or are they going to try and run with Peyton Barber, Ronald Jones, or Dare Ogunbowale? I think I said that correctly.
He did that very well, yeah. No, I don't expect him to make a deal, especially not for Gordon. Gordon's going to be an expensive back to get. I don't think Bruce Arians is a coach that really puts a lot of value in paying running backs top-tier money, and that's certainly what Melvin Gordon would need to get on the playing field. Kenyon Drake would be a little less expensive, and the Dolphins are certainly in fire sale mode right now. But no, they like the back they have. I don't see them parting with a draft pick, even though Drake would give them a speed at the position they could really use. So, yeah, right now I think it's Barber and Jones, and to some extent Ogunbowale, and just seeing what those three can do.
I've definitely seen a mixture of the three of them on the field throughout, and Ronald Jones looks like he may be able to step out of the label of bust if he can continue picking up positive yardage. Do you think that Ronald Jones can show us this year that the draft capital spent on him was a wise investment?
Yeah, I mean, that first game, you know, I mean, he had more yards against San Francisco in the opener than he had his entire rookie year. Was nearly invisible last year as a rookie, just never really got into it, was inactive, was a healthy scratch a lot of times. So what we've seen this spring, this summer, is just a lot more confidence, coaches that believe in him. He got bigger. He's trained a lot in the offseason to help him get in position to be the kind of back he was at USC. Crazy big play potential. And if you look at his offensive numbers at USC, I think he had 350 yards and touchdowns his last year with the Trojans. I mean, that's the kind of big play threat that the Bucs haven't had in their run game. I mean, in 17, the year before they drafted him, they had 8 yards on touchdowns all year in the run game. They had 7 touchdowns. 6 of them were 1 yard, and the big one was 2 yards.
That's
so
gross.
He can be something they've sorely missed. It's just a matter of getting it to be consistent. I think the second game in Carolina, he kind of tweaked his ankle a little bit and wasn't a factor because of that. But moving forward, he and Peyton Barber are both going to get chances to kind of be the guy. And I think each week as that goes, I think Bruce Arians is going to kind of stick with the hot hand in the second half. And they've both been that guy already this year.
Yeah, I certainly wasn't sure about him. And I've stayed away from the Buccaneers backfield for quite some time because that's just depressing. But when you have to take one, and a lot of times, especially when you get in the bye week shuffle, you have to pick up somebody from the waiver wire, and a lot of times the starting Buccaneers running back is still sitting there. If both of those players were on the waiver wire, who would you suggest to our listeners they should pick up?
You know, right now, I think when you look at waiver wire pickups, you're looking for upside. And I think I think Ronald Jones probably has more of that right now. I think Barber, you know, by the end of the year, might finish with more numbers just over the course of 16 games. But for a one-week play, Rojo's not bad. Again, if he starts breaking these long runs like he had in college, you get a 40-yard touchdown, that's a 10-point play. So I think that's where he probably has a little bit more to offer, especially just as a spot start if your starters are on a bye week or something. Depends on the matchup, obviously. But this week with the Giants giving up a lot of yards and a lot of points. So it's not a bad one for either of those backs.
Who would you start this week if you had both guys, Peyton Barber or Ronald Jones? And I understand that there's a lot more upside with Ronald Jones because of the home run potential. But who do you think will be used more in this matchup? I kind of see it being Peyton Barber strong, but you're the guy that knows the team.
Yeah, I mean, Barber had 23 carries in Carolina. That's a career high for him. I think he finished with like 82 yards, which isn't a huge number, but had a great 16-yard touchdown. He's kind of the hot hand right now. I mean, Jones, by comparison, is a little bit uncertain just because he was injured at the end of the last game. So I think he's practiced fine today. I think they'll both be healthy for Sunday. But, yeah, if I had to pick one, I think Barber's probably the smart play this week.
So if Jameis Winston is going to pick it up, do you think the Giants is a good matchup for him to kind of gain confidence again and get to some of these big number games that we kind of thought he was going to be? He was definitely a sleeper flying below the radar, but a lot of us in the industry expected Jameis Winston to be in the top 7 conversation for quarterbacks this year.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants defense, I mean, he's faced two really good defenses in the first 2 weeks this year. I mean, San Francisco's front four is a challenge. Carolina's defense, I think, is one of the better defenses, period. And the Giants aren't. I mean, the Giants gave up 35 points their first week against Dallas. They got a bad turnover margin. They've got a lot of things that are problematic. So I think he's in much better position to put up the kind of numbers that people want to see this week compared to the first two.
Yeah, and I'm hoping he keeps that Godwin connection alive, man. Man, that is just that was a great touchdown pass and catch there in Thursday night's game. That was probably the high point of the game for me, the most excitement that I saw. And moving on to the final question, where can we find your work?
Everything's online at theathletic.com. Get the stuff there. Covering the Bucks, I'm on Twitter at my name, which is at Greg Allman. GREGAUMAN. Between the two, that covers about everything.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day. We really appreciate you giving a little deep dive into the window of the Buccaneers and a little bit of a dive into yourself as well. We really appreciate you having you on, and we look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Hey, thanks again for having me. I appreciate it.
And next we have Dave Briquette from the Detroit Free Press, beat writer for the Detroit Lions. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing good. It's nice. Early on a Saturday morning, I guess you're in the central time zone over there?
Eastern, but yeah, you know, getting ready to fly out to Philadelphia a little bit here later on today.
Oh, right on. So It is Eagles and Lions this week.
Should be a good matchup. I probably would have, 2 weeks ago, wouldn't have thought the Lions had much chance going to Philadelphia, but injuries leveled the playing field a little bit. So we'll see. Philadelphia's pretty beat up. Lions are looking healthy, so we'll see how that plays out Sunday.
Well, and how do you feel about that Lions secondary? They seem to be Darius Slay's pretty good back there.
Yeah, they've got Slay back there. I think Quandre Diggs is a pretty good player. The one thing they've done this year that they didn't do last year was force some turnovers. They've been a little bit better about that. I think there's still some question marks back there. Tracy Walker, I think, will be a good player in time. He's had a few growing pains here, really giving up a couple big pass plays. Been a really solid tackler. Rashawn Melvin has played pretty well at the second cornerback spot, but always a concern, the depth back there. And, this is a pretty good Eagles offense too.
Yeah, they certainly do have some weapons to use, and they are. It looks like Alshon Jeffery will play. DeSean Jackson will be out. So how long have you been covering the Lions?
Ooh, all right. So I started at the Free Press in 2010, so been about a decade with them. I did cover the Lions sort of briefly in the 2007 season. I kind of came aboard. Covered the 2008 season for a different chain of papers. The Suburban chain of papers here in Michigan, the Oakland Press. And then I left, covered Michigan for a year. So all total, this is, I guess it's probably my 11th full season on the beat, but broken up into two parts.
That's a long time to be with a team. So, and I'd asked you before if you grew up there, you said you were from the area. So this is you, has this been your team?
I mean, look, when you're, when you're young, I think you always root for the local teams, or, when you go out and play in the front yard, you're, emulating Barry Sanders or, Anthony Carter from Michigan, or, whoever the Lorenzo White, whoever you kind of see on TV. I mean, certainly now, at this stage of my life, I'm sort of gone beyond being a fan. That kind of gets knocked out of you when it, when you get in this profession. So, growing up, I was certainly, those were my teams, like any kid in Michigan. I think the Lions in Michigan and Michigan State and the Pistons, and sort of rooting for all Detroit teams.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to root for who else do you watch on Sundays growing up? Who's been the most exciting player for you to cover so far? This is quite a tenure.
Exciting? Is that what you said? I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. Most exciting player to cover over your tenure there with Detroit Free Press.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Kelvin Johnson, without a doubt, he's a, future Hall of Famer. He's probably a guy that, will at least I think will be first ballot Hall of Fame. I'm the Detroit representative, so it's kind of up to me and my presentation of him. But there's no doubt that Kelvin was an electric receiver. Some of the things that he did, there just aren't many receivers in the history of the NFL that could match the talent that he had. So I don't think there's any debating who the most exciting player that I've covered, at least in the professional level, was.
Yeah, absolutely dominant in his heyday. He was a lot of fun to watch, even as somebody who was not a Detroit Lions press member or fan. I mean, that guy was just absolutely dominant. Who have you been surprised by the most so far this year?
T.J. Hockenson. That's the easy answer. I mean, he had such a huge opener, and I think we all thought he was going to be a pretty good player, but tight end's a position that typically takes a while to make a big impact at. So, the fact that he had such a huge debut, set an NFL record for receiving yards by a tight end, that did catch me off guard in the amount of production that he had early on.
Yeah, he certainly went out there. He had a lot of people calling him Baby Gronk. Do you think that the Lions' passing offense is potent enough for him to put up numbers like that continuously throughout the year, or will it be a little more boom or bust right now? I know it's really tough for rookie tight ends to get any footing in the NFL, really, in their first year.
Yeah. No, I mean, I sort of went into the year thinking he was going to catch, 50 balls and, be a, big red zone threat for them, maybe catch, five or six touchdowns, and I think that's, probably stay with that was my sort of prediction for him. I mean, we saw he had the huge week one, and then he caught one pass in week two. And I think the Lions are such a big game plan team that there's going to be weeks that Hockenson is a big part of what they do on offense, and then there's going to be weeks where, you know, maybe he's asked to block a little bit more. So I don't know that, you know, let's say from a fantasy standpoint, if you're looking for huge tight end production numbers, I don't know if Hockenson's the guy you want to rely on every week, but I think just from a football standpoint, he's a really good player, and I think you will see in time that, you know, the impact that he makes is a lot more consistent.
I definitely see him as the top tight end out of that class by a long shot. How do you think Matt Patricia has affected this offense since he's taken over as the head coach?
They've become a little more conservative. I mean, we've seen them take some shots, a few more shots downfield this year under Daryl Bevel, but you know, there's no denying what they want to do and what they want to be. They want to be a run first team. I use that term loosely. You know, they're not going to run the ball more than they pass the ball, but they certainly want to control the game with their running game and control the game in the trenches and, you know, have the versatility off that, you know, the ability to throw the ball downfield and to throw the ball to their running backs. So, you know, I think that's, Patricia's a defensive coach, so that's kind of in his nature. You know, he wants to play things a little closer to the vest and win games that way. Where the days of Matthew Stafford throwing for 5,000 yards are over, though I do think he can have a pretty good year overall.
Absolutely. Do you think Kerryon Johnson can help kind of balance that offense? I know a lot of people in the fantasy world invested some draft capital into him and haven't quite. The last week was a good week, but I don't think he's quite returned that draft investment. Do you think they'll actually start moving towards a quote-unquote run-first offense where Kerryon will get more of a workhorse load? Will there ever be a workhorse in Detroit?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I mean, I like Kerryon. I think he's going to have a productive year. Certainly, it's been a little disappointing so far, the 3.2 yards per carry, not completely on him. I think he had about half the running back touches last week. But I'll say this, you know, the Lions, they got rid of C.J. Anderson. Really, they gave Kerryon the third down reps last week, and that's something that C.J. Anderson had been ticketed for. And so right now, Kerryon he's their two-minute back, and he's their third down back, and obviously he's their main running back. You know, Ty Johnson, the rookie, is certainly going to get some, you know, he's the number two now, and I think he's, you know, just the skill set he has athletically is probably a better, you know, change up than C.J. Anderson. So the Lions like what he can provide. But, look, you know, it's not going to be an Ezekiel Elliott-type workload or, a Christian McCaffrey-type workload, of course. Matt Patricia believes in the share, you know, carry system, I guess, and splitting that workload up. And so I think you'll continue to see whether it's Ty Johnson or J.D. McKissick or whoever it is get a few reps. But Kerryon is certainly this team's number one running back.
I guess feature back would be a better term than workhorse. He'd be the guy who's going to see the, like you said, the 2-minute, 4-minute role.
Yeah, and he is this team's, you know, if you're looking for some, if you're in a PPR league and you're looking for some cheap, you know, points, you know, Kerryon's going to, just from being in that position, maybe he gets a check down or two extra a game because he's playing on third downs, you know, or he's playing in 2-minute. And so I think there's plenty of value in there as you're a running back one in fantasy. I don't know about that, but I don't think he's that far off, or the potential at least isn't that far off.
Yeah, he's certainly got the talent to break a few extra check down passes down for some big yards and some touchdowns. What do you think the most pressing offensive need is right now for the Detroit Lions?
Well, I think offensive line is still the biggest question mark on this team. Week one, we saw, you know, Taylor Decker had a rough day at left tackle. 4 penalties, 2 sacks allowed. You know, the Lions played pretty good against the Chargers last week. They had to commit a few more resources to blocking just with their chips and whatnot. But, you know, I think that's still because they want to run the ball so much and because protecting Matthew Stafford is paramount considering, you know, he's so valuable to this team and how beat up he was last year. I think the offensive line is still, I don't know that you go out and you can get somebody, you know, the offensive line is that unit that needs to gel together. So I don't know that there's a fix for it, but I do think the offensive line is still the biggest question mark on offense.
And that can definitely have its effect all the way across the board on that offense. If Matt Stafford doesn't have the time to throw or you don't get run blocking, that really clips the wings of that offense. Who would you think right now is Matt Stafford's favorite target, Kenny Golladay or Marvin Jones?
I think Kenny Golladay is the number one receiver without a doubt. You know, Marvin's had, you know, he's had some nice games and he's had some, you know, nice seasons, but you know, Golladay is, he has the potential to be a pretty special receiver. And you know, what the Lions want to do downfield, you know, Galladay's big body, his catching radius, his hands, you know, I think all that fits into what they want to do. So, you know, I think my colleague Carlos Menares at the Free Press and I, we had a little, you know, friendly bet before the start of the season as to, you know, who the leading receiver would be on this team. And he took Danny Amendola and I took, you know, Kenny Golladay. So that's not to say Marv's not going to catch passes, but I think in terms of volume, you know, Marv might end up being number three at the end of the year.
Yeah, it's interesting that you guys so close to it didn't even put him in the bet there. A lot of people in the fantasy industry still saw that going into the season as a 1A, 1B kind of situation. I guess Galladay's really distinguished himself there. Are you surprised by how much Amendola is featured in this offense, and do you think that's something that will continue throughout the year if he can continue production?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit like Hockenson, like we talked about. You know, there's going to be games where he has big games like he did in the opener, and then I don't think he caught a pass last week against the Chargers. I mean, you know, the thing with the Lions offense is beyond just being, you know, very game plan specific, I think you're right in saying that, you know, Marvin is the number two, or sort of, you know, he's the next receiver in the pecking order after, you know, Kenny Golladay. But the thing with Amendola is, you know, he's just that safety valve, you know, that outlet. And so playing that slot receiver position when the Lions don't go with two tight ends, you know, he's going to catch a few passes just when Stafford's looking for, you know, to get rid of the ball quick. And you know, Amendola can still get open in some of those short areas. So, yeah, I think, you know, Amendola's going to catch a lot of passes. But if you look at his, you know, statistics over the course of his career, he's probably going to average 9 yards a catch. So he won't have the same sort of impact that Kenny Golladay and Marvin Jones will.
Yeah, he's certainly more of a PPR option, that safety valve or safety blanket for a quarterback, kind of the Jamison Crowder role from New York. And it's really important to have that. And Danny Amendola is a very crafty receiver. He knows how to get open. Is there anybody that you think is flying under the radar on that offense right now that people could look at to develop this year? Is there another receiver waiting in the wings if somebody were to go down, somebody that's not really been hyped up out there?
No, I think the Lions are pretty thin from that standpoint. I mean, look, Chris Lacy is the number four receiver, and he's, you know, ideally for the Lions, they're not going to play him or Travis Fulgham, their number five receiver, much, if at all, this year. So, you know, they have three receivers. They've got a couple tight ends. You know, the one guy that maybe would fit that bill would be Ty Johnson, the backup running back. But unless you're in the deepest of fantasy leagues, you know, some sort of dynasty, deep dynasty league, I don't know that you want to go investing much in Ty Johnson because, you know, again, Kerryon is the number one running back. And, you know, there's only a year separating those two in the draft. So it's not like Kerryon's headed for free agency next year and all of a sudden this is going to become Ty Johnson's team.
No, absolutely. That's a good 1-2 punch to have there, though. And Ty Johnson really wasn't on anybody's radar until C.J. Anderson got dropped. So that's a great candidate. And I wonder, there's going to be a lot of people making moves for him on the waiver wire this weekend to see if maybe they can get ahead of the curve. So the last question on the list here is, where can we find your work?
Yeah, I mean, look, freep.com, it's freep.com. That's where we have all of our Lions news, you know, comprehensive coverage, as always, of games and the weeks leading up to the games. And then, you know, you can always follow me on Twitter at Dave Burkett, B-I-R-K-E-T-T. Tend to tweet out all the links there and even some of the smaller news that doesn't always warrant writing stories. But love to answer fans' questions, too, so when I'm around, so feel free to hit me up on there anytime you want.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy Saturday morning to jump on with us, and we look forward to seeing what the Lions will produce and to see more of your work this year. Thank you so much.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you again.
And that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks for checking out our first episode of On Beat. We will be back again next week with the Giants Vikings and Broncos beat reporters. Check us out on Twitter at Sleeper Wire Show. You can find me at Esorbor1, Esorbor1. That's my name backwards. And we look forward to seeing you guys next week.